Good morning. It is 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro, 91.9 FM. I'm Mark Smith, and joining me by phone today is U.S. Senator John Bozeman. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Doing well. Got a lot of things to talk about today. Of course, one of these things is the super committee. We're expecting a report from the so-called super committee on debt reduction just before Thanksgiving. There are rumors that this group may not be able to come up with an agreement which would trigger this sequestration, a system of automatic cutbacks.
Well, I hope that's not the case. Certainly that is a worry. Those of us in our committees are working hard to help them identify areas that they can cut back in. And so, we're all working very, very hard to help them in their efforts. One of the concerns I've had is that the committee hasn't been as open as I would like, and we're trying to, make it such that it is transparent so that the American public will know better what's going on.
What are the risks of allowing this sequestration to occur?
Well, there's tremendous cuts to defense and also cuts to Medicare. So this is something that no one wants to happen. On the other hand, we need to push hard. We can't continue to essentially borrow 37, 38 cents of every dollar that we're spending. So in order, I think, to avoid future downgrades in our credit rating like we saw last time, we need to come up with significant cuts.
Well, one of the major sticking points seems to be whether to raise taxes on the highest income brackets. Is that the case? Is that the sticking point there?
Well, I think what Republicans would like to see is a change in the tax system itself. You have a situation right now where, for instance, Warren Buffett is concerned that he's not paying his fair share. But if you essentially just increase taxes on a system that's not fair, it's not simple, that really doesn't make a lot of sense. What we need is a tax code that's fair, simple. It isn't right that Warren Buffett is in the situation he's in, but if you just raise taxes on the upper brackets, he will still be in the same situation, and everybody else's taxes will go up. It's also not right that a company like OG&E, who's making billions of dollars, doesn't pay anything. So we need a system that's fair and simple, and I think everybody agrees with that. The problem is in the details.
Yeah, that's the details is what we need to have a national discussion about.
You're exactly right. And that is a real positive thing I think that's going on right now is that we are having a national discussion, and I think that in a number of areas, both sides are closer than one might think.
Well, the argument from the other side is those with the lowest incomes, of course, don't make enough money to be required to pay income taxes. They still pay sales taxes and other state and local taxes, but no income tax. And they really can't afford any additional burden. Then you get the middle-income taxpayers who do pay income tax, but they're struggling in today's economy just to stay out of that lower-income level. They can't afford anymore. So the high-income people are the ones who have money, and a tax increase on them would not impact them a great deal. They wouldn't be homeless or anything like that. They would still have a lot of money.
Well, the top 20% now are paying 85% of the taxes, federal income taxes, right now. Many of those are small businesses. And I think, most economists right now, President Clinton came out a few weeks ago and said that they didn't feel like it was the time to raise taxes on anyone. So the other side of that is, though, again, you can't continue to spend 37, 38 cents of every dollar as borrowed money. Right now, the government, as a percentage of the total economic activity in the United States, is about 24%. It's the highest it's ever been since World War II. Traditionally, it's about 18 or 19%. We've got to get that spending level back down. The answer is not to raise taxes eventually on everyone, because that's really where the money's at, is in the middle class, to make it such that 24% is covered.
Well, as we look at the economic unrest we have here in our country, there's also economic unrest in Europe. Of course, Italy and Greece facing possible economic collapse, governmental change in those countries. How do you see that situation shaking out, and how does it affect us, or how will it affect us?
Mark, it's got tremendous potential to affect us. The world is a small place now. We have a global economy. Right now, the problem is in Greece. It's in Ireland. It's in Portugal and Spain. We're hearing a lot about Italy right now. 50% of the Italian debt is owned by the French. And so they're really, the problem is a tremendous domino effect. So it's something that we need to watch and be aware of, because the repercussions could be tremendous. Along with that, you have, Iran right on the verge of becoming a nuclear power. That's either going to, a country that's basically said we want to develop a bomb so we can blow up Israel and then deal with the United States. So there's lots of unrest throughout the world, and these are things that do very directly affect us.
Yeah, you bring up the threat of the Iran nuclear capability. What should our response be there? We've got threats of Israel possibly responding in some way. What should our response be?
Well, I think our response should be, an economic response, in the sense of, doing all we can to punish them for going forward. But that doesn't seem to be working very well. The problem Israel has is that they have a country that, has just overtly stated, we're going to develop a bomb and then blow you up. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, eventually Israel is going to have to react to that, and probably act. And we need support to be supportive of them and give them the supplies and whatever they need to carry that out. If Iran is allowed to go nuclear, then you'll see nuclear proliferation at the least. By countries like Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, all of those. I've been in meetings with those individual countries where they've all said that they will go nuclear also, because of the historic confrontation among the Iranians and the Persians of the rest of that part of the world.
Well, of course, here in our own country, we've still got so many issues to deal with. One, the unemployment situation. The House did pass a couple of job-related bills, mainly involving access to capital for entrepreneurs and small businesses. I don't know if you're aware of these and what happens now with these. I assume they're going to go to the Senate. What kind of response will they have?
Well, there's about 15 bills that the House has passed that are good bills that I believe really will help the economy. The president's job proposal, essentially providing funding for school teachers and firemen in states like California and Illinois who've not, been very fiscally responsible, and yet they're important to the next election, that's not a stimulus program. The problem there is that when the money goes away, the jobs will go away. And so I was, disappointed in that and voted against that. I like the infrastructure spending, and what we're trying to do is work with the president, but really not support his program, but in lieu of that, in working with the president. In fact, Senator Inhofe, Senator Boxer, who don't agree on a whole lot, but they agree on the infrastructure spending, are working really hard on the committee that I'm on, and also participating, trying to get a two-year highway bill, which would give some certainty so that our states and individuals could go forward with long-term projects and actually put some people to work. The good thing about infrastructure is that once it's over, not only have you created jobs in doing it, but then the economic activity comes about as a result of it, and those are jobs that will last forever.
Yeah, and you are currently working on this highway reauthorization bill, which should be, very important. Obviously, infrastructure is something we need to focus on.
Yes, sir, very much so. I would argue that that's one of the reasons that the United States became the tremendous economic power that it did. The foresight of President Eisenhower and Democrats, Republicans working together at that time, building the interstate system, which truly was a wonder of the world.
Well, here in Jonesboro in northeast Arkansas, we're facing the loss of an airline service to our airport, despite the fact that the airline that was servicing Jonesboro Airport was having fairly good ticket sales and fairly good demand for flights. But the key seems to be keeping this essential air service subsidy in communities like this. I guess the question is, in our era of looking at cutbacks, is how essential is the air service in such communities?
Well, you have to weigh all of these things. I've been very supportive of essential air service. It was on the Transportation Aviation Subcommittee in the House, and now on the Commerce Committee, the Aviation Subcommittee there. This needs to be worked out in conference. Where we're running into trouble in Jonesboro is the proximity rule that's being proposed, being too close to Memphis. Mm-hmm. That's not a done deal by any means, and so we will be working hard with the House and the Senate and see if we can reach a compromise on that. Because, as you say, the essential air service in Jonesboro is growing and very healthy. And so air service is important to communities. And so, again, that's something that we'll be visiting with our colleagues in conference and see if we can resolve.
We've got a unique event coming up a little bit later today, a national test of the emergency alert system. This is the first time this has ever been done. First of all, why are we having this? Why is this the first time this has ever been done?
Well, that's a good question. It's difficult. We live in a very open, free society. We can't protect against anything. We live in a dangerous world. We've just talked about all that's going on throughout the world. And so it is important. If somebody did set off a dirty bomb or something like that, we need to be able to react. We need to be able to respond. We've had all of these freaky weather things that have happened, throughout the last few years. If there's a major earthquake and Jonesboro, Memphis, are right in the number one fault line. So we need to have the ability to contact people if that's the case. And that's really what all this is about. So somebody has said, hey, we have this in place. It makes sense so that we can have a national response. Let's test it. And that truly is all there is about it. But I think it's a good thing, and we need to be prepared in case of a catastrophe.
Is there anything the public needs to do in response to this test other than to just be aware of it?
No, I think the important thing is just to be aware that it is just a test and that there's nothing, nothing sneaky about it. It's not anybody trying to take over the United States or anything like that. It's something that is being done in good faith, and I think is very important because the reality is that sometime in our future, there's a fair chance that one of these occurrences will happen. We need to be prepared. We need to have all the tools available that we can in order to respond and be as helpful as we can.
And it might be a good opportunity for just average people to just review their own emergency plans among their family and community.
I think you make a very good point, Mark, that certainly, especially with things like on-time delivery and, where things can run very, very short in our grocery stores or hardware stores quickly. So it is a good idea to have just some basics on hand in case there something does happen. And you're right, just on a personal level, review how you're going to deal with an emergency.
Well, we got an opportunity coming up this Friday, of course, to honor our veterans. And on Veterans Day, I understand you got the opportunity to address the Senate about this week.
Yes, I had the opportunity yesterday to talk about the men and women that have served. My dad did 20 years in the Air Force. So it's not only about those that have served, but about their families. And really just express it's so important this time of year just to take a moment and just pause and as a grateful nation and really remember the sacrifice of the men and women that have served throughout the years and the fact that we didn't get in the position of being the greatest, freest country the world has ever known by accident. It's taken a lot of hard work, and a lot of that has been on the backs of the people that have served. The thing that things that bring that to head, you know, where you really remember is that we lost a soldier last week, a young lady, a 19-year-old who had a young daughter and had joined the National Guard, joined the Oklahoma National Guard, and was killed earlier in Afghanistan. So we're thinking about her family and those others, you know, that we've lost, and just our military in general.
Do you have any particular plans for Veterans Day yourself?
Yes, sir. I'll be in Conway, and they're starting a Veterans Hall of Honor, and we'll be participating in that event. You can be very proud of Arkansas State in your region. They've done a tremendous job supporting vets and you know, just have a very, very good program, really not only a state leader but a national leader. And so, again, this is something that I think we in Arkansas can be very proud of.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned that. ASU has been recognized as a very veteran-friendly campus nationwide.
Yes, sir. No. Again, they are setting the standard and just doing a number of programs going much above and beyond the call of duty in the sense of just being very, very helpful and really setting a great example, not only for the rest of Arkansas, but for the country.
All right. Senator John Bozeman, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, as always.